Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, Episode 3, Season 7, which confuses a lot of people, I know, but it makes sense to me when I'm kind of adding everything up and working out where everything's going. I hope you've enjoyed the first two episodes, and I hope you've checked out our new show sponsor, which is, of course, Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Please check those guys out. Without them, we wouldn't be here. Always remember that. Right, moving on. Slightly different show again this week. On my left, I have got Jack Bennion. Hello, Jack Bennion.
Hello, Tony Simpson.
And on my right, normally I'd say, hello, Ryan Champion, but this week it's Zav McCartan. Hello, Zav McCartan.
Hello, everybody. How are we?
I think we're all right. Are you all right, Jack?
Yeah, not too bad. Getting there.
That's all right, then. That's all right, then. Well, we're not going to muck about. We're going to go straight to page 12 this week of your dandy paper, MN, of course, and a subject that we've covered, I feel like, in every episode for the last 12 months, but it's an interesting piece, Jack, about Yari Matti.
Yeah, good to have this piece, wasn't it? After we had that conversation last week as well, talking about how Yari Matti had done it at Monte Carlo. Really nice piece from David Evans, as usual. The kind of piece where he earns his bread and butter. He's the best rallying journalist around, really, to be honest. And you know, he's got some really good insight from Yari. I think it all stemmed from a story that a Finnish newspaper put up about Yari Matti, and I think he was misquoted in one of the stories that somebody had put out there in Finland. So David gave him a call and got the real kind of story, and it's just about Yari Matti trying to match his teammate OJ and how his career started to go downhill because of that fact, you know, because he'd tried to do everything the same as Sebastian and it hadn't quite worked out for him, and now that he's in the Toyota lineup again, he's got that sort of relationship with Juho Hänninen that he had with Mikko Hirvonen at M-Sport that allowed him to excel.
Again, just following on from what Jack just said there, Zav, obviously the Finnish feel as well. I'm sure the love of Tommy Mäkinen, I think he was a big hero of his as well. Obviously, based back in Finland, he's probably living back in Finland and he can go testing it. It's just everything. When Yari Matti's happy, he's happy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, there was pictures of him on social media showing somebody, I think it was from Toyota, one of the first rally cars he drove. So, you know, for him, it was... if you like, a step back in time. And when he signed for Gazoo and Mäkinen, theirs is ready-made comfort blanket, for want of a better expression. Spiritually, he'd feel at home. With the Finnish outlook and things, he's going to feel a lot more at home. And he obviously needs that, not cosseted, but arm around the shoulder type, which in the perfunctory matter-of-fact way that Volkswagen was probably run wasn't there. I mean, anybody going into a team where you have a freak such as Ogier and Loeb, you're automatically going to be, to a certain extent, in the back foot. And I mean freak in the nicest possible way. You know, up against Loeb, a master, nine times world champion, up against Ogier, we've seen his determination, the focus that he has. He wants to win every power stage, win every rally. You know, it's a tall order for anybody. It doesn't mean that Latvala has a weakness to his character. I think the whole idea of where he is now, we may see what we should have been seeing through the year. We've seen glimpses of it, but I'm looking forward to seeing how he performs, as well as Juho. I mean, two of rallying's nicer people, set of people, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, Jack. I think it's fair to say we've had strong driver lineups over the years, but I think as I've just said there, taking it was another one where you perhaps felt that the teammate, you know, you think about Richard Burns was perhaps the aside to that, but he had to move on, of course, to Subaru in order to kind of reestablish himself as a front running driver. You know, Freddie Luggs came in and we all know how talented Freddie was, but he never quite got it at world championship level alongside Tommy Mäkinen. So there is a definite pattern, isn't there? Strong number ones, you know, very determined number ones who perhaps build the teams around them and not really around the teammates as well.
We see it in all forms of motorsport, don't we? You know, there's almost always that number one driver. And I think, you know, Yari is although Juho has done a lot of the testing of that car, I think you've got to call Yari Matti the number one in that team, haven't you? And I think that's a situation maybe it doesn't quite fit in with what we've talked about previously there with M Sport, because I'm not sure Yarick would be defined as the number one driver with Mikko Hirvonen in the team. I think that was very much an exception to the rule, wasn't it? They were both very, very good drivers, and one of them would take it to Low Beach Rally usually rather than one of them being a defined challenger, if you like. So maybe that's a bit of an exception to the rule. But yeah, we usually get that sort of number one driver, don't we? And you can usually look at a team and pick him out straight away. But I think with that Toyota setup, Jari Matti's got to be defined as number one.
Before we move away from this, I don't want to get stuck on Jari Matti as much as I love him, but I'll come to you first, Jack, and I'm going to come to Zav on this. If Jari Matti doesn't secure a world title as a driver before he retires, will it be a disappointment for rally fans, because he was seen as the big hope? I can remember, I've talked about this too many times to bring it back up again, but I knew of Jari Matti during his early days with Penske, because I was working with Penske at the time. And, Penske said to me back in the day when he was a 17-year-old boy, he is going to be the next Finnish World Rally champion. Now, where are we now? Jari Matti's, gone through a number of teams, number of different cars and evolutions of World Rally cars and everything else. But Jack, would it be probably one of the biggest letdowns of drivers who've not won a world championship?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? From a fan's point of view, I'd probably say a lot of fans would like to see Harry win a title, just for the fact that he's a likeable chap and he's good to watch, he's entertaining, and he's always there at stage end with something interesting to say. But I think from wanting to see the best drivers winning the best cars situation, he's had the prime. You'd probably argue that the time at Volkswagen was the prime of his career, and he's been up against OJ, which is difficult, but he's not managed to beat OJ really, definitely not consistently. And he had that one win in Finland where he beat OJ fair and square by about 15 seconds, I think, didn't he? And that was one of the performances of his career. But over the course of a season, he was never really a challenger to OJ for a title. So I think when you look at it, I'm always one to look for the best drivers and the best cars, and they should be the ones who win the title. And I don't think Jari Matti's shown that at any point of his career so far, which some people may argue with and say it's not really fair. But for me, he's had three seasons alongside OJ and didn't manage to come out on top once. It's a difficult one to answer, isn't it? It's the whole thinking with your heart or thinking with your head situation.
Zav, would you think it would be an opportunity missed if we didn't have Jari Matti as the next Finnish champion?
It's a difficult one. What Jack says there is very good and correct. But for me personally, no. I don't think it will be a disappointment. At the end of the day, you have potentially every year 14 or 15 drivers. They're contesting one title. And okay, there are different grades of drivers. I accept all of that. But I think where Latvala scores heavily is in today's ever so political world of media correct statements. There's a raw emotion about him that endears himself, certainly to me, in where he gets his honesty and, the desperation that you see and hear sometimes. And I think that honesty provides fans that it's something they can relate to. Whereas with some of our more curated world champions, they've had a bad stage looking live or listening live. They've dropped time, yet they can reach the end of the stage, pull off the helmet, and their answers are very straight to the point. There's nothing emotional about them. So, no, I don't think so. Latvala has endeared himself to many people. Began, as you said, over here in the BRC. Everyone remembers the Jim Clark incident. But just to sidetrack for a second, I know we have a lot to get through. What's interesting for me this year, more than anything, is, we saw Seb Loeb with the Zara and the C4, heavily designed and built around them. We saw Ogier take a year in the S2000. And then the Volkswagen itself, with a lot of the testing, designed around him to a manner of being. I'm really interested to see where Chris Meek goes with the Citroën. He's done the majority of the testing. It has been built. He has an engineering background. I'm really eager to see how that starts to pan out when we hit some of the loose surface events later in the year.
I think it will be good to see. As I say, I think Julian touched upon it last week as well about the planing effect. Obviously, running it too low on the tarmac, and you would like to think that. I think we're going to come to this a little bit later on, but I think you guys have ran a feature, haven't you, Jack, with regard to, not being fooled by the false start of Citroën, because there's, it's one event. Let's not get too carried away.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I did did say on the podcast the week before Monty that this is going to be a really difficult rally because we were all going to get really excited about the new cars and how they performed, but also it's really important to bear in mind that this isn't a solid representation of pace for the year. You know, is Thierry going to dominate in Sweden? I'm not so sure. You know, I think although he was quickest car in Monty, the conditions play a part, the tyres play a part, the aero play a part. You know, some cars are going to be quicker on gravel, some cars are going to be quicker on tarmac, and you know, we've had one rally. It's very difficult to, well, it's not difficult, but it's important that you don't get carried away by what you've seen in Monty, because the conditions are so changeable, and you know, as we've seen before, anything can happen in Monte Carlo. And you know, it was an exciting rally, and that doesn't help in sort of keeping your head and thinking with your head in terms of being realistic about what's going to happen this season. So it's very important. I think, you know, Portugal is going to be the point where we know which cars are the best. We will have had Corsica by then, and we will have had Argentina as well, and you know, some proper rallies by then. So that's the point for me. Portugal is where I'm looking at to see where, you know, who's going to be the main contender of the championship or contenders.
Now, you mentioned Sweden there. We're talking about private cars and everything else. And Mads Osberg, of course, who's going to be joining forces with Martin Prokhorov in a two-car team. They're racing against time. You've run an article today, Jack, with regards to them trying to get their cars ready and everything else. Be the first private run ones. Mads seems very happy. Ironically, we've just been talking about Jari Matti being very much part of a happy M Sport family back in the days with Mika Hirvonen and stuff like that. But Mads Osberg seems very happy back with the adapter setup, but albeit slightly stressed by the fact that he hasn't quite got his hands on a car yet to test.
I think if you look at, you know, Mads' history, all his best performances have come when he's been in private cars, and you know, I think we'll see a lot from him when we get the car. Whether he's going to be up to speed straight away in this car after so long away, you know, that's a different thing to consider. But yeah, I think the one thing he has got on his side is that all the drivers have only had one rally in the 2017 car. Where Mads might be a little bit sort of behind is in terms of testing. He won't have tested the car as much as almost any of the guys who are going to be in 2017 cars in Sweden. So the testing is going to be to his detriment. But also, when you look at Mads's results in Sweden, he's always been very strong there, very good. So, you know, with the variables that have been thrown up by these new cars, you know, no one's got that much experience driving them. Maybe he can come in and get a result, you know, first time
out. Happy days. Did you notice, by the way, Jack, I was very, very nice. I didn't kind of rekindle that whole thing of getting mixed up between Estonia and Finland when we were talking about Finnish drivers before. Did you appreciate?
Yeah, thanks very much for that. Although I didn't really mix them up. It was more a sort of similar sort of attitudes that Tanak has to Finnish drivers. Obviously, I just didn't verse it very well.
I think you've had a week to think about your excuse now, Jack, and it's still, dare I say, lame. Okay. That's.
Well, you know, I'm so perfect that you're just holding on to this thing, aren't you? Because you've got nothing else to criticize me about.
Hey, listen, you're completely and utterly true. Now, one thing we didn't do last week before we carry on. Right. Have you got that Stirling any other business still in your back pocket?
Maybe.
We're going to come back to that in a second, because I'll be honest with you, this is one thing that I didn't warn Zav about, because Zav's going to do something for us a little bit later on in the podcast as well, but I haven't warned Zav about any other business. Zav, have you even thought about any other business?
I find my any other business today could be a recipe for disaster. There's something I'm unbelievably passionate about, but I just may say the wrong things. It probably needs to go through the BBC's Board of Censors first.
Okay, that sounds quite ominous really, doesn't it? Zavin address, I think that possibly is Zavin address. There's an image that you really wasn't planning for. A couple of things I wanted to just go to as well. Before we move on with the more obvious stuff of what's going on in the news at the moment. The entry for Kyle Rovanperä on the national event on Finland. Have you seen this one, Jack?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Which I just think's mega exciting. Mega, mega exciting. The only problem I've got with this, and I know I'm going slightly left field from what we normally do at this point, but I almost wish he could enter under a different name to take the pressure off him.
Yes, there is that. There is the fact that he's going to be under pressure, but is that not a good taster for his future? Because, you know, we've seen all the pressure that he's had on him already, and that's not going to go anywhere, you know. And it's been the same with Max Verstappen ever since, you know, ever since anyone worked out who Max Verstappen was in Formula 3 before he went to Formula 1, you know, the media hype started pretty early on when they realised how young he was and all that kind of stuff, and then came into Formula 1 and was, everyone knows the Max Verstappen story effectively, and Callie is kind of that guy for rallying, isn't he? He's that guy. He's been identified very young, and the pressure's always going to be on him for the rest of his career, so he's going to have to deal with that. And entering any sort of Rally Finland event, whether the attention's going to be on him, is I think it's going to be a great test for him, and it'll be a sign of things to come for how much pressure he's going to be under in the future. So if he can't turn up to the national rally in Finland and perform under the pressure, then he's really going to struggle to perform in the World Rally Championship, isn't he? So it's a good taster for what to expect in the future.
No, fair dues. I love that. I just want him to be allowed to develop as opposed to put pressure. So we've all had these kind of young drivers come through, and some have continued on. I guess we've just been talking about Jari Matti, of course, as a 17-year-old. Again, we've got another young Finnish driver here that's, his father was perhaps a little bit further up the ladder than what Jari Matti's old man was, but his old man could certainly hold his own. But, sons of coming through always seems to have that, that pressure on, don't they?
I think it's a little bit different with Kelly in the fact that, Harry will be making sure that while he's not costed it, certainly those distractions and those pressures will be removed as possible. You have to say, for the age that he is and the natural confidence that he has and that air, that Finnish characteristic of sometimes looking nonplussed, will stand him in very good stead. I think he has a good group of people around him. I think he, as a competitor, will be keen to see where he is. If it gets too heavy, there's too much heat, you can sit back or pull out for a little bit or whatever the case and control it. So I think Jack's right, in fairness. Stick him in, see how he gets on. He'll learn from it. There'll be mistakes, there'll be positives, and then you just regroup and look and see how that affects your 1 year plan, 2 year plan. It's not that long ago we were talking about Itanic and the fact that, I made the reference on one of the shows where are we putting too much responsibility and pressure on people? We forget they're only 21 or 22 or 23. But he seems eager. His dad seems eager. But they won't do anything that they haven't thought about. So I'd be looking forward to see how he gets on.
This is Absolute Rally. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good news agents. Or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. Now, one thing following on from last week, and I can't believe I do listen back to the podcast, by the way, folks. I listen back to it for an editing point of view. I'm not that self-absorbed. I need to hear my own voice. But I didn't realise just how much I went on last week. And by all means, Jack, you can verbally give me slaps when we do these programmes as well, about how much I cared about the package and how polished I want the whole package to be and everything else. And the reason why I'm bringing this back up again is a little bit of a headline that you guys have run here with Rally Mexico goes Bond, which is a great headline, by the way. But just tell the listeners a little bit about this one.
Well, first of all, that story's about probably 300 words, and I reckon you did about 3,000 words on the package last week. So you can times our story by 10 for a podcast,
yeah,
can't you?
Absolutely. Thanks, mate. Go on. No,
that had to be done, didn't it? Just really, if you've seen the film Spectre, James Bond film, it's the last one with Daniel Craig. There's a scene at the start where there's a helicopter flying above a giant square, and there's kind of guys in like voodoo looking outfits and that kind of thing. Hopefully they won't be there for the rally.
No pressure for our world championship drivers.
Exactly. So we've got a super special stage in the same square that the film is sort of based in. So they're hoping to get roughly around 250 fans into this place. But the bit that got me was that it's been years in the making, this deal, and the cars are going to do a 500-mile round trip to do a mile-long super special stage. So how the kind of maths come into that and how the teams feel about doing that, I'm not entirely sure. But for me, it sounds a bit extreme doing a 500-mile round trip to just do a mile-long super special at this venue.
Yeah, I seem to remember, I think it was Mexico, it might have been Argentina. I can remember the cars arriving, doing something, and then going on the car transporter.
It was, I think that was Argentina a few years ago when they used the River Plate Stadium. And the, I don't know if it is the same year you're thinking of, but the next day's rallying got cancelled because there was fog or something that grounded the planes, and they couldn't get all the team members back to the service area. So, yeah, interesting one.
It's going to be good. You know, Patrick Soberville and his team, in fairness, have tried different things. You know, there's the underground stages on the opening night, if you remember. You know, the rally's based in Lyon, but you Guanajuato, you've got stages like El Chocolate. And don't forget too that, you know, Malcolm Neal, the late Malcolm Neal, was the service park manager, and the Rally Mexico team aren't afraid to utilize talent and experience. I mean, it was the first ever rally I did on live radio, and if I could pick an event to go back to, it would be Mexico, because the stages, the people, the fans, the towns, it really is. It's a pity it's so far away, and that's stating the obvious, but a really well-run event. Great team, really friendly, couldn't do more for you. And they come up with something different, you know. Stages all loop around Lyon, fabulous town, and fair play. You know, the stages and the tunnels, we've all seen the McLean photos through the tunnels with the art. They really do know how to put on a rally. Looking forward to this.
No, me too. And Ryan still scoffs, by the way, at the 34-mile stage. He still thinks it's a walk in the park for most, but I must admit, For all of us, I think it would be epic. Jack, I just want to move on to a couple of other little bits and pieces at kind of world championship level, and then maybe we will come a little bit more local. David Evans done a great piece with regards to where all the teams are up to after round one, which is where it came from before. Nobody fooled by Citroën's false start.
It's we talked about Citroën a lot last week, didn't we? And you know, I think we can kind of reiterate some of those things now. You know, talking a lot about the setup issues and that kind of stuff. With trying to get the springs to work on the bumpy tarmac. I think we talked about it a bit last week, didn't we? And you know, Chris Meek was had an unfortunate run and had that crash, and then was taken out by the guy on the road section. And then, you know, Lefebvre set some quick times on the Sunday, which was good to see. But you know, it's going to be interesting to see Craig in Sweden, isn't it? Because it's a rally that he's been. It's probably one of the most one of the rallies he's attended most as a WRC in a WRC car, if you like. Couldn't get my words out there. He's got quite a bit of experience in Sweden in WRC cars, so it's going to be great to see him getting his chance there.
It will be. I have to say, I had some friends out on Monty, and I had a really, really interesting conversation with the friends who were out there watching, and the very experienced rally people as well. And they were saying that at the section where they were, Craig was visually faster than the other Citroëns, believe it or not. And the other comments they made was, out of the Fiestas, the closest driver to the lines that Ogier was taking was Elvin Evans. And that was from people who know. It was a really, really interesting conversation, which obviously, when you go out watching, you only see for that little section, of course, of that particular, that particular stage. So, you know, for the rest of the rally, it could be a million miles away from what's being spoken. But the section where they were the two things that were outstanding that they witnessed on that one anyway. But Zav, we've seen this before, haven't we? We've seen teams come in and come back and everything else. And, it hasn't quite gone according to plan, but Citroën Racing can't afford not to come back with a stronger package on Sweden.
Now, they'll come back with a stronger package because everybody that started this year, irrespective of the amount of testing they've done, has arrived with a compromise setting. Sweden a little bit more specialist, Portugal specialist in a different way. A compromise may or may not work. And as Jack has said earlier, there's such a parameter, a variable to Monte Carlo, snow, ice, black ice, that you can't really legislate for. I think Monte Carlo's in there because of the prestige of the event. In terms of the test, yeah, it's a test, but it's not a true reflection. Citroën, I don't think will disappoint in Sweden. Meek has a familiarity with it, so does Craig Breen. Lefebvre, it'd be interesting to see how he goes. And it's like I'd said earlier, you know, you're now starting to get into the the groove, if you like, of events coming up. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the Citroens go. Neville might surprise you, yet still he seems to have a completely different attitude to what he had last year. It's like the shackles have been lifted. Yari Matti, I mean, pride and the freedom that he has could be a very dark horse.
Okay. Well, listen, I just want to crack on to it. I've got some other bits and pieces I want to talk about, as well as some of the headlines, Jack, from you guys. But there's a fantastic piece written with regards to David Richards. Of course, we all know Pro Drive and everything else, and how he views the World Rally Championship right now. It's a great piece, isn't it?
It is, yeah. It's, you know, really nice. You know, I've said earlier, I think we've complimented David enough today, but, yeah, brilliant piece and really worth going and picking out and reading. Cause it's the kind of piece you're not really able to get from anywhere else other than people like David, who've really got the insight. He's been covering the WRC for a long time now and well aware of David's sort of, predictions. But if you're not aware, David basically predicted a long time ago that rallying would be available on phones and it should be streamed online and all that kind of stuff. The only problem is he was well ahead of his time and couldn't get people to buy into that at the time. So, David's done a piece which basically charts the history of sort of from David Richard onwards, who promoted the championship and where it was on TV and all that kind of stuff, and has charted the rise and fall and kind of concluded that we might have a few more manufacturers today if David's sort of vision had been implemented a bit earlier. And I know it's a little bit of a controversial view. Some people won't agree, and some people will say, you know, it was, even if they had taken up David's ideas a long time ago, then that, you know, there wasn't the technology around at the time to make it viable that we've got now. But yeah, I think it's a really interesting piece, and you know, I think the point stands that David did kind of predict where everything was going, and you know, it's a shame that we didn't have the technology or the people behind it to kind of make it happen a little bit earlier.
I think he has got a very Marmite kind of attitude, hasn't he, with regards to certain things. But by the same token, his passion and his knowledge and what he's done in the sport, people do have to listen to what he says.
Well, I think if I remember right, he's an accountant.
Yes.
By trade. So everything's either plus or minus. Black or white. There's no middle ground, no grey, no, you know, hushed up, wish-washed answers. And that's what I like about him. You know exactly where you stand. We've seen in the past when he ran Pro Drive, he wasn't afraid to talk to Colin when Colin wouldn't listen, or Carlos, or anybody else for that matter. He was the same when he was in Formula One. So, you know, David Evans going to have a chat with him about what he saw back 7 or 8 years ago. It's a good piece. But that's the beauty of David Richards, is you get it. Lock, stock, two smoking barrels, whether you agree with him or not. And people like him are a joy to talk to, you know, and listen to.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Right, boys, I've got a couple of things I just want to fly through. Jack, I don't know what I'm sure you're all over this one. It's one that I really want to talk to Rye about, and we'll have Rye on it next week. Unfortunately, Rye couldn't be with us this week. But this with regards to the R4 company called Orica, who've been chosen to supply the R4 kits. I've seen some discussions online, a couple of message boards and things like that. And for those of you who've not seen it yet, search it out. A company called Orica, who've worked with various rally teams over the years, supplying engines and things like that. Very much show engines. I think they did the Skoda engines. I think they did some Citroen engines as well back in the day. But effectively, they have developed a kit which will now, I suppose, go down the route of what AP4 we've been talking about, of course, in the Asia Pacific, you know, area and stuff like that. And effectively silhouette racing, where, you know, the transmission and everything is being put into different shells. What do you make of this, Jack?
Wouldn't be surprised to see some more information about this in the pages of MN in the coming weeks. I think the initial press release they put up caught a few people off guard, and a few people weren't really expecting this to sort of be announced when it was. It's an interesting one, isn't it? And it's my understanding that the kit covers the engine as well. So how that's going to work, inserting an engine into various different cars, is going to be quite difficult, I think, in terms of the mechanical side of things and the engineering kind of things. And it's my understanding with things like this that, you know, you're going to get different solutions to different problems. So trying to sort of police this strikes me as being quite difficult, in the sense that when people are building these cars, they, you know, they're going to go about it in different ways. So it's going to be really interesting to see sort of how this is, how this plays out, and whether, you know, to be honest, I think the fact that they've announced it now, it's, you know, are we going to see any of these cars at the start of the year? Very much doubt it. It's way too soon to be, you know, planning a build of one of these cars and doing it for the start of this season, isn't it? You know, in terms of sort of your domestic championships. Well, I think so anyway. I don't think anyone would be able to turn around one of these around quick enough. But
I was really, really shocked, the fact, it, you know, they said they won the tender. Now, the reason why I brought this up straight after, there is a method in me madness when we do these programs, believe it or not, folks. But the reason why I brought it straight up, after we've been talking about David Richards, is that I would have thought someone like ProDrive would have, and this is nothing against Orica, by the way, quite the opposite, but I didn't realize it had gone out to tender. I wonder who else was in for the tender. And again, would somebody like a ProDrive who's worked with different manufacturers, you know, aside from their rallying exploits, obviously with Aston Martin, with regards to racing, and obviously with Ford in touring cars and various other places, you know, Australian as well, touring cars as well, working with different manufacturers, whereas Orica, I don't know a great deal about them, and by all means, if someone wants to put me straight, you know, to get hold of me on Twitter, it's at TonySimpson74. But they are very much an engine company who do some other bits and pieces. Well, they are an engineering company. I thought someone like ProDrive would have been absolutely blob on for this job, Jack.
Yeah, I think, you know, may have taken a little bit away from Orica in the sense of what they've done in the past with all their sort of sports car achievements and stuff like that. You know, they've done Formula 3000, various kind of touring car championships, European Le Mans Series, Le Mans, FIA GTs, from stuff that I can remember. I'm sure they've
No, I completely agree with you, but there was a very common thread through what you've just been talking about there, which was racing.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're not as well known in rallying, and that conversion's been relatively sort of relatively new, hasn't it? They run Team Sunderland and Skoda R5 to the second in WRC 2 Championship last year, but apart from that, you know, their history sort of before that is not sort of very well known in rallying. They haven't got a great history in rallying, but yeah, I take your point. You know, obviously a different company with more sort of rally knowledge may have been better for the job, but until the kits are actually out there, and yeah, you know, to be honest, I think this isn't much to do with the actual kit. I think this is through the sort of thinking behind it and where the FIA are going with this, because, you know, like I said before, I'm not sure how easy it's going to be to convert a production vehicle into a four-wheel drive 1.6 litre turbo car, and how easy that's going to be to do, and how easy it's going to be to police once you've done it in that sense is strikes me as being very difficult to do. And you know, it's at the subject of the local ASNs as well, so you know, the likes of, if you're in the UK, the MSA have got to approve these cars as well. So there seems to be a lot of, you know, it's just, I don't really see where they're going with it in terms of where they're aiming at. And, you know, they're talking about it being an upgrade from R3 and things like that. But I'm just not really sure where the ranks are at the minute. I know I'm going on a bit now, but, you know, your new R2s are as quick as the DS3 R3s. So that the R3 situation's kind of mute, isn't it, really, in terms of your pace. You're going to go for an R2 there. How much quicker do you need to go before you go for an R5? And is there really a gap? Is there a gap in between there? And is a kit converting a road car the way to do it? I'm not entirely sure. And I'd like to know a little bit more about who's behind this and what they've seen that makes them think that a kit's a good idea in this situation. You know, I'm not ruling it out. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying I'd like to hear a bit more about what they were thinking when they decided to go with this route.
I would love Ryan Champion's take on what you've just said with regards to that move from a two-wheel drive car straight to an R5 car. There's got to be something in between, and I guess
there has, definitely.
But that's where
what should that thing be? Yeah. What should that thing be? Is this a kit to a production car the right way to go about it? That's all I'm saying. I'm not sure it's the right way, but like I said, I'd love to hear a little bit. Maybe Ryan would be the perfect person to speak to and get a driver's perspective on the situation.
Yeah, because I'm not a driver, and neither of yous have. But do you see a need for something in between R2 and R5? Are you taking my point? I'm open minded on this one. This is why I'm asking.
Who's that to me?
Yes, to you, Zav.
All right. I'm not so sure. I mean, it's almost as though the FAA put this out before they told anybody else. And as Jack has said there, and done very well, and explained it as well as he can with the information to hand about Orica. It's what else is available or what else isn't available. To go back to what you were originally saying about ProDrive, I'm sure all of those companies were approached or notified they could tender. but it's that they want to do it. Is there going to be a return on it? They're in business for money. Maybe there isn't that return. Maybe their production costs and having to put this together, there wasn't a margin on it. It's almost, we need to know more about it. Do you need to have something in between? Possibly for some drivers, yes, but for others, I would say no, not necessarily.
Yeah, actually, what? That's a good point. A couple of other things just want to tidy up. Snowdrift Rally, this isn't as much of a discussion point. Snowdrift was last weekend. Seemed really, really odd, by the way, not seeing the likes of David Higgins and a few of the others there as well, which is their opening. Of course, their opening round now is going to run side by side in this new American Championship, which is run alongside the Canadian Rally Championship on the opening round, which Crazy Leo was telling us about last week, and more to be coming from Crazy Leo, by the way. Just makes me giggle just even saying the word Crazy Leo. Yeah, just moving on. Heard a little bit of a rumour that Andreas Mikkelsen will be out in a polo on a handful of rounds this year in WRC. Possibly.
Story's already been in MN.
Possibly.
Last week.
Possibly from Portugal onwards.
Also in MN a few weeks before that as well. Well, so you need to read the paper more closely.
No. Listen. This is on good authority. This is on very good authority.
MN usually does stories on good authority as well. That's usually how we operate.
You're very precious today, aren't you? Very precious today. All right, listen.
Well, you made a point of the Tanak thing, so I'm sticking to my
guns. Yeah, but you've already got me back for that one, Jack. Come on, don't get precious. Listen.
Well, I've got to get ahead again now.
I suppose. You're not getting any from me. Have you got your any other business round?
I have, actually, yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to do your any other business, because after your any other business, we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with Galway. Unless you want to stick around for Zav's preview of Galway.
No. If Jack has the time, yeah, let's do it.
Okay. All right. Well, let's do it.
Yep, for Jack.
Do you want to do Galway with us as well, Jack?
I'm gonna have to shoot.
Oh, there you go.
I've got MN to write, I'm afraid.
He's got a proper job. Okay, Jack, go on. Your any other business?
Well, my any other business last week was going to talk quite a bit about spectator safety, and I wrote a column about it in last week's MN, basically saying that, you know, Monty is a great example of the fact that people in Britain need to, well, not everyone in Britain, obviously, that's a wide sort of number of people, but rallying in particular needs to wise up to the fact that, you know, crashes like happened in Monty, if that happened in the UK, then, you know, rallying could be lost overnight, and it's a really serious issue that when you speak to some spectators out on the stages, they don't really understand the kind of situation we're in terms of how rallying's working at the minute, in terms of how quickly it could be shut down if something happens that, you know, the likes of the insurance companies or the government, the MSA, these kind of people, if they see something they don't like, they can shut the sport down overnight. I received a letter in MN this week as well, which I've replied to, which you can read if you like, saying how I'd been a bit harsh on rally fans. So if you think you're one of those people, if you think I've been harsh, then I can understand that. But my column basically last week was to kind of bring it home that, you know, the what happened in Monty was terrible for everyone involved in terms of the family of the affected and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it was really sad to see. And if that had happened in the UK, in the situation that we're in now after the Jim Clark rally and the Snowman rally, then, you know, we could be losing our sport. And people talk so much about Britain being one of the homes of rallying, and you know, I'm sure we've got listeners from all over the world and listeners from America and the likes of, but, you know, Britain and Ireland really is the home of rallying, and the fact that, you know, I've banged on about this quite a lot over the past year, and sometimes I think people must be thinking, oh, is that dramatic guy again who seems to think rallying's going to end tomorrow, but, you know, it really is that close if we get an incident like we did. So I really just wanted to use my neighbour business to kind of remind spectators who are going out to rallies to be safe, stand in safe positions, listen to the marshals, and use your common sense. I know I haven't got any, and I know Zav definitely hasn't got any, but use your common sense, pick a good place to watch on the stages, and don't stand in places where, you know, you could sort of open yourself up to any sort of dangerous actions, and just remember that the sport's relying on you to represent it, in the sense that, you know, if someone dies, the local newspapers are on it straight away, and they're not as they're not as savvy with rallying. They don't know as much about rallying as maybe the likes of the specialist fans do. And it's very easy to make rallying look bad very quickly. And you know, we really have a responsibility to our sport to be safe out on the stages when you're spectating. And I promise that's the end of my ending business. And I'm done whinging about spectator safety. And I'm going to pass over to you guys.
Mate, very, 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 very valid points. And I'm not taking the mic, but I genuinely couldn't have put it any better. In fact, I wouldn't even have a hope of putting it half as good, but still, there you go.
Also, I quite like my job, and I would only have half a job if rallying finished overnight, and my job would be far less interesting. So for my benefit, if anything, please spectate safely.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you, Zav. Does yours follow on from anything close to that?
Yeah, it does actually, and I fully endorse everything Jack said. I'm old enough to remember 1986 and Joachim Santos on the RS200. And we got, I see people excited about the 2017 cars. I am all for speed as much as the next man. But I do worry about the speed of the 2017 cars, because I don't think spectators really realize just how much quicker into a corner and out of a corner they come. I also think that what Jack has said and written, what David Evans writes, what Pacers Rally Magazine writes, that's fine for people who understand the sport. My any other business is I do fear for the sport. And I think Jack's right that, you know, it's one accident away from the whole lot being shut down. I think it's the amateur casual spectator that goes with a group of friends to look at a rally or see a rally that don't know sensible places to stand. It could well be that you can't, you know, tell them when they're on the stage. There's a terrific piece that was written by John Fife that has been shared by the likes of Callum Duffy and a few others. And I urge people to go and read it, because it's a very good, clear and concise explanation of that. The normal rally fan understands you don't stand on the outside of a bend. But for those who are new to rallying or have seen it on TV all of a sudden with the improved TV coverage, we do need to educate other people. My any other business, I do fear for the sport. Not so much just from the safety point of view, but in terms of some of the legislation it's coming under, in terms of the way it's been run by certain authorities. It's almost like there has to be layer upon layer and upon layer of accountability. You know, 25, 30 years ago, you know, you'd have gone to your local motor club and look at some Castle films, met like-minded enthusiasts. Nobody does that anymore. The motor clubs aren't getting an increase in membership numbers. We listen to people in media, on the radio, on TV, and they spout how wonderful the sport is. I would love to know how many of the recognised names who bring us motorsport currently actually are a member of a motor club. I think the answer, if you could find out, would really surprise you. And it's the motor clubs that need the support, the motor clubs that encourage young people to come and get involved in tabletop rally and navigation rally and marshalling. And that's not happening. So when you see events struggle for marshals, you know, Galway, Donegal, the Jim Clark, for example, everybody now is struggling for marshals. 10 years ago, you didn't have that problem. You know, the spectators in some areas are herded into pens. They must all stand 15, 20 deep. It's the same with photographers, because it's a safe place to stand. I'm not against safety, but there needs to be some kind of common ground. And I see an alienation between the sport and the people who follow the sport. And I do worry about the future of it. I really do.
Zav, can I just I'll add to what you just said there? And I completely agree that, you know, most of the education needs to come for the kind of people who aren't as versed in the sport and don't know much about it and are just going out for an afternoon, if you like, just to see what's going on. But also I worry about the very small selection of spectators who go out in our sport and claim to know more than the marshals and claim to know more than everybody else. You know, we all know that fan. We all know that person in rallying who thinks they know better than everybody else and thinks they can go and stand wherever they like. And I stood here in 1973 and watched Stig Blomqvist come through here in a Saab, so I can do that now. And I'm safe. You know, it's those kind of people that need. They're the kind of people who need educating as well. In my opinion, is you know, the people who, you know, it's. I've done it this long, and I've stood in this place for this many years, and I've never been hit with anything. So it's fine. Which to a certain extent, you know, rallying, to a certain extent, has always got to have some sort of self-policing factor on the stages. That's always going to be an element, and a lot of people will be safe, and a lot of our fans in this country are very knowledgeable and very intelligent. But there are that group who seem to think that they can go and cause trouble on stages and go and stand in silly places because they've done it for so many years. And you know, to me, that's not acceptable, and I'll keep working to try and persuade those people that's not correct.
Absolutely. Listen, boys, we're going to go to a break, and as I say, Jack, thanks for your annual business. Same time, same place next week.
Absolutely. See you there. Thanks very much.
I see what you did. I'll catch with you next week, and we'll be back with a Galway preview with Sav McCartan after this break.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports from clubman rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. We've lost Jack. But we are back with Zav, and as I say, one thing we want to try and get into a little bit more this year is we want to try and get more into the Irish Tarmac Championship, because we always kind of make reference to the Irish Tar whenever we talk about rallying anywhere in the world, it feels like sometimes, but definitely we're blessed by the fact that some of the guys in the front run of the WRC now, you think about Craig Breen, you think about Chris Meek, you think about Elvin Evans, these are the guys that probably cut the teeth on quite a lot of this stuff, obviously the first two being very, very obvious. But Zav, we are back, it is Galway this week. Now I'll tell you one thing that I see straight away looking at the entry list, and maybe I'm showing my age a little bit here, but looking at the amount of Ford Fiesta WRCs, R5s, it takes me back to perhaps looking at an entry list 20 years ago where every car was a Subaru.
Yeah, I mean, it has changed, it's gone full circle. This weekend, as you say, is the Car of Oil Galway International. And after a little bit of if you like paperwork and stuff at the start of the year, a lot of people looking forward to this weekend.
It's what I say flippantly, that I remember Subaru at the top of the tree some 20 years ago. The man who's still pedalling a Subaru, albeit a 12B, a 12B, is Gary Jennings, who is just still hanging on there. I must admit, I'd seen a little bits and pieces on social media. He did try that Mitsubishi Mirage, and I know supposedly he was going over to Sweden. I was surprised, but maybe we might have seen that car back in the Irish Tar this year.
I think it's possibly something you could see later in the year. I know that in the Ulster he didn't have the greatest of runs. He had done tests and he was pleased with it. He was finding, I remember doing radio there, and he was telling me he just couldn't get the car to turn in. Then when it did turn in, you know, if you remember, the Ulster was unbelievably wet. The heavens opened. We had mist. We had heavy, heavy, heavy rain. So it wouldn't have been ideal. You've got himself and Declan Boyle in WRC cars. Now, I think part of it is when you drive a WRC car, you're driving, if you like, the ultimate in speed, performance and everything like that. I think when you're used to that and maybe take a step back to an R5, you're maybe not going as hard as you can. But I think it's a matter of time, really, before there's a few more people make their way into R5. And, I mean, the championship this year is looking really, really good.
There's a name again. We think about legendary names. There's so much history with regards to Irish Tar, and obviously generations as well. And you think about, you know, the black BMW McHales. Now the McHale name is back with Aaron McHale, who hasn't been around for a while. He did a fair bit of rallying back in the Focus. He even did some WRC rounds, but he hasn't been as busy as what he once was, I think it's fair to say.
Well, Aaron has moved across from a Skoda into a DS3 R5 this year, and of course is that awesome, but the Extravision M3. Speaking of M3s, I believe we're still liable to see the Ernie Graham Toughmac BMW M3. I could be wrong there, but there is talk of that happening. But you look at home, it's a family thing. Josh and Sam Moffat, their father Robert, you know, was a well-known rally driver 25 years ago, rallycrossed as well. You know, you have Alistair Fisher, the name Bertie Fisher, again synonymous with the event. Declan Boyle, been rallying for such a long time, and again, as you said there, Declan synonymous with an S12. Johnny Greer, his father, David Greer, Joe McGonigal again, Kieran Geaney. you're shaping up. You've got Robert Barrable is a late entry. He's going to be in a CA One Sport car. I believe Stephen Wright is back in the Killy Hebron sponsored car. It's boding very, very well for an unbelievably competitive championship. A lot of talk last year about, you know, the Tarmac Championship organisers taking R5 cars only, S2000s, that kind of thing for the overall title. But what it gave us was a battle that went to the wire in Cork with Keith Cronin and Alistair Fisher. Great battle all weekend. And we're going to line up for something similar this weekend.
You've just mentioned a name there that I'm a little bit surprised. Have we heard anything about what Keith Cronin's doing? I know the car went up for sale towards the end of last year. I don't know where it ended up, whether it's still for sale, but the man who always, our guilty pleasure, and I'm sure you've got this as well, Zav. I know me and Rye have spoke about it a few times. There's a couple of websites. Obviously, there's rallycarsforsale.net and there's motorsport auctions and stuff like that. But Karen Graffin, KG Motorsport, buys and sells so many cars. He's not giving us any money for this, by the way, but he's always got stuff for sale now. Keith Cronin's car was for sale via KG Motorsports on rallycarsforsale.net. Has there been any word on what Keith's doing this year? What's going on? Or is he just taking a year out? Or what?
I've heard whispers, much like probably the same source that a lot of whispers come from, and maybe your Andreas Mikkelsen story, that there could be something in the BRC with Keith Cronin and a Fiesta. But at the moment, that's all it is little whisperings and little murmurings. I mean, Keith is a multiple British champion anyway, and a really, really talented driver, and somebody that Malcolm Wilson rates highly. You may well see Keith out on sporadic events later in the year, but I would be surprised if you don't see him at all, to be honest. I think you'll see Keith at some point.
I think it'd be good to see him out. Anyway, listen, we need to tell maybe some of our listeners that are not fully au fait with what the stages are and what the stages are like and just how many days competition. So just kind of, we've gone through the runners and riders almost in the top 10 there. What are the stages like? How many stages are they going to be doing and when's the event start?
The event starts, the scrutiny begins Friday at 2 o'clock at the race course in Galway. For anybody that's listening over there, you make your way to Galway race course. There's a ceremony. It'll start then on Friday evening at Eyre Square. 9 stages on the Saturday, with service at Athenry Mart. And then there's 6 stages on the Sunday with service at the Tuam DOE Centre. Finishes at the rally headquarters, which is the Clayton Hotel, at about 3:30. And then, of course, the prize given 8 o'clock on Sunday night. You know, they've changed some of the stages this year. Galway, you know, this time of the year, you're not blessed with consistent weather. Galway have known in the past have had to cancel stages with, you know, downpours, floods. But, you know, the organisers and the likes of Kieran Donoghue and the people that work with Kieran and everybody else always, always put on a really good event. They work so hard. And, you know, you have entries from Germany, China, all over the world really are making their way to Galway this weekend. You know, and you have cooperation and work with the Garda Síochána, Fáilte Ireland, the Road Safety Authority. It's. I think there's a lot of people have been waiting for this to kick off, and a lot of people looking forward to this weekend.
Oh, me too. In fact, again, it's something, and I always say this, and whenever we talk about it, and like I said, I want to cover it more. I'm not just saying that, obviously, because the wonderful people are Pace Notes are based over there, but they cover all kinds of rallying. Of course they do now. But, you know, back in the day when I was a hungry rally fan and I was desperately trying to find rally coverage, I always managed to find more, and this is way before YouTube and everything else, but I always managed to find Irish tarmac coverage, and you know, I think about the iconic images, and maybe not quite as far back as you know the M3 BMWs, but certainly Bertie Fisher in the Group A and Pretzer, and then you start thinking about one or two. I'm trying to think, what are the brothers? The Corolla. Multi-Irish tarmac champion.
Eugene Donnelly. And
Eugene Donnelly, yeah. That's it. And his brother as well, of course, who ran the GT4 Celica as well. I can remember watching, you know, iconic kind of images of those guys over the years as well. So I'm fascinated by Irish tarmac rally, and it's something we are going to focus on a little bit more this year. And we may even take in an event.
Yes, indeed. And for those, Tony, you're eulogising there, but listening in, for those who are listening worldwide, Galway Bay FM intend this weekend to report from all 15 stages. Now, there'll be news and updates, so I suggest that those of you who get on Galway Bay FM, and they will be broadcasting throughout Saturday and Sunday, as well as the website itself. The Galway Motor Club and the event have a terrific social media service in terms of Twitter and on Facebook. So you will be well catered for. Rally FM, who are very popular over here and support a lot of events and club events, circuit events. They were Brands Hatch recently for the stages. They're over to support the event as well this weekend. So there are many, many ways to keep in touch with what's happening. Of course, you'll get your latest news and Brian and Liz Patterson, Rally News. They'll be bringing you news and updates throughout the day as well, I would imagine. So there's a lot of places that you're going to be able to catch up. There's a few people, Tony, I think we need to really give a shout out to. John Armstrong, who, as you like to say, is a friend of the show. The good news for John is that he will be driving the R2 T Sport Trophy car, its debut at Galway.
Yeah, well, we spoke about that, just if I can just interject ever so slightly. It's the R2 National car,
yeah.
Which is the slightly more. We had Andrew Wheatley on episode one of the season, of course, from Motorsports Show. He was telling us all about the ethos behind this car. You know, yeah. Ryan and I have both spoke at length, you know, at a £55,000 R2 car, how it's not really achievable for most people. And I'm sort of developed this car, and they've entrusted John to debut it over an island on this event. And it'll be interesting to see. It's not quite a full R2T spec car. Obviously, it is the national car, so it's got Bilstein suspension on it. I think it is fixed suspension. The engine is pretty much standard, but it has got the sequential gearbox on. But John Armstrong will still pedal it as hard as what most people will pedal R2T anyway.
Listen, I'll tell you, he will wring the neck out of it, because some of his performances in his own Fiesta and the Ulster last year, or the year before and that, they were just eye-watering. If there's anybody can pilot at full chat, it'll be John. I mean, there's other people as well, Tony. I mean, Ross Ford, previous Billy Coleman Award winner, he's out in a fabulous Escort Mark II RS1800. And, of course, Motorsports Ireland clubman Art McCarrick with John McKay. They're raising awareness for the blood platelet donation. Art, who supports that on a weekly basis with blood, what they call them, in Dublin. So there really is, I mean, looking down the entry list, some late entries, Brian Brogan, for example, in their Escort. As I said, Ernie Graham's there, David Guest, Ed Murphy, Richard Wheeler, Liam Howlett, Viv Hamill. There's a terrific modified battle about to take place as well. Eugene Megan, who went very well last year in the BMW 1M. Stephen McCann with Damien Fleming, of course. He's got the Ford Fiesta S2000. He was testing last weekend, I believe. He was very happy with how that went. And I think people are going to be very, very well catered for with this weekend's Galway. I really do.
No, I am really, really looking forward to it. As I say, I'm going to be following it online. And yeah, folks, if you are listening, by the way, and so I know a lot of people do listen to the podcast when they're going to rallies. If you're at a rally and you listen to the podcast, get some images, tweet them to us, because we will retweet them. And we're looking for a new wallpaper as well for our Twitter and Facebook page. So if you're out there and you're watching events and you listen to the podcast, take some images and it'll be great if we could use them for a week or two as well. That would be great as well. Zav, thank you so much for that preview for Galway. Obviously, we'll have a catch-up next week with regards to how the event went and the opening round of the Irish Tarmac Championship. And yeah, I think we'll go to a little break. And Zav, we'll catch you up next week for a couple of minutes, okay?
Yeah, look forward to it. And as I say, don't forget Galway Bay FM, Rally FM on Twitter over here. We'll be keeping you up to date, as well as the website.
Fantastic. And folks, we're going to come back with Paul Coleman from Codemasters. You're going to be telling us all about DEV 4.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Britain and Ireland's only dedicated rally publication. Rally news, interviews, features and reports. From Clubman Rallies to the WRC. Available from all good newsagents or subscribe at rallymag.com. Pace Notes Rally Magazine. Your number one monthly rally read. This is Absolute Rally.
Welcome back to Absolute Rally. And a bit of a treat for us, a bit of a treat. We've spoke about the numerous times. We've been lucky enough to give away some copies of the game, and Ryan and I have got involved with it Paul Coleman made me go out and buy a steering wheel, and then my other half went out and bought me a seat. Well, I really invested in this game. I was excited as anybody, by the way, to see that Dirt 4 is coming about, and I thought there's no better person to get on and basically tell us all about what's going on as Paul Coleman, the man himself from Codemasters. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm really good. Listen, thanks for coming back on Absolute Rally, I'm really, really excited. Now, we've just briefly spoke before we started this about the kind of timelines and stuff of things happening. Now, Dirt still feels relatively fresh and new to me. So how do we get to Dirt 4 so quickly, or have I just kind of lost track of time?
I think time flies when you're having fun. But yeah, it's actually been quite a long road to get here. I know we talked quite a lot when I was last on about the processes that we went through to get to where we were with Dirt Rally. But with Dirt 4, it's something that we've been talking about pretty much since we released Dirt 3, which was back in 2011. And actually, Dirt Rally became a kind of an offshoot from some of the prototype work that we were doing in the background for what is now Dirt 4. I think one of the biggest issues we faced as developers is getting enough tracks into the game to give our fans I guess enough unique road to drive on. It's one of the biggest problems with a rally game is you spend a lot of time driving stages, and obviously that's point to point. In a normal circuit racing game, you can get away with a few tracks because you're going to turn multiple laps on those. It's part of the sport. For rally, it's very much a point to point sport. And to really capture the essence of what rally is, we need to have as much unique road as possible so that you have to listen to your co-driver and adapt to the conditions in front. So we've had some ideas as to how we were gonna do that, and I think the last time I was on, I hinted at the fact that there was something in the pipeline that was going to help us kind of solve that problem. And with Dirt 4, we're really pleased to announce that we've got this new system called Your Stage, which is essentially procedural stage generation, and it really taps into what it is to go rallying.
So, again, for the uninitiated, what does that enable the gamer to do? What is so unique about that as opposed to what we've had before?
So before, we had tracks that were handcrafted, and those handcrafted tracks meant that we had about, let's say we had 12 unique 9-kilometer stages that we'd then cut up and run forwards and backwards to try and get as much use out of them as possible. But while I think it's fair to say that in the more modern rally events, stages are reused and you get different loops happening across different days because that helps with spectators and event organization. Ultimately, rally driving is about the teamwork between driver and co-driver going out wrecking a stage and then relying on the pace notes to remind you what corner's coming up next, rather than learning meticulously the detail on a racetrack where maybe you've got 10, 12 corners to worry about. So Your Stage is our way of addressing that, and what we've actually done is created hundreds of track pieces. So think of this as the best Scalextric set you could ever own, and a Scalextric set that's entirely based around rally racing, so you don't have to connect it together. It's a system that essentially lays down track pieces through a landscape, stitches them into that environment, and based on the parameters that the player puts in, so length and complexity, we then spit out stages, and we reckon the number of possible combinations is close to infinite. It's not actually infinite. There is a number, but it's like 10 to the power of something ridiculous. So.
I was never good at maths, Paul.
It hurts my head thinking about it too.
Now, which that all sounds fantastic. How does that work with the pace notes? Because obviously, that's as you've just said, you know, that's such a big part of what the original game was. You were the man who voiced them, of course. So, how does that work with regards to, you know, you're designing your own stages and stuff? How does that work with the notes?
Yeah, so because we know what the corners are doing within the pieces that we've created. We essentially call the pieces as individual sections of road, and then where they join together, we concatenate a distance in. So much like you would get in normal pace notes, you would have a distance to the next corner. So if that's a long, 200 meter straight, then we'd add the 200 onto let me start again. The distance out of the last tile and into the next tile gets added together. So if you've got 50 and then 200, we'd add that into to make a 250 call. And so so you came out of a left four, it would be left four 250, and then you'd get the next corner on the next tile call.
Wow.
So it's all kind of joined together, so it's not the scripted calls that we did before, but we had to cut those up anyway to make sure that we adjusted to the player's pace. So this is now going to be voiced by Nicky Grist. So he's making a return to the series, which is great news for the old Colin McRae fans.
Yeah.
And it sounds great. It doesn't sound robotic like I think you get in a lot of other rally games. It really feels right. He's done the same thing that I used to do, which is to sit in the motion seat while the recordings are done, so you get that sense of movement in the voice. And yeah, we're really happy with how it's come out, and the system works, which is one of the main concerns we had, because obviously to throw unknown stages at a player and expect them to get on with it, you have to have the calls to match that, because otherwise you're going to be kind of punishing the player unnecessarily. So yeah, very happy with how it's all panned out.
That is just mind-blowing to think about, where we come from. I've been a connoisseur of rally games. I think about the first rally game I had was the Lombard RAC on the Atari ST, and you think about where we are now, it's just mind-blowing to even think about some of this stuff. Now, obviously, you had the hardened rally fans on the previous game, and I'm sure you brought in some new rally fans as well. Has there been some dumbing down for the rally fan, or have we found a compromise across the board, perhaps not the hardened rally fan?
Yeah, so, I mean, in the past, we used to have to compromise to reach a broader audience, which meant that some of the previous games in the Dirt Series were a little bit dumbed down, as you say, and that meant that they weren't particularly great for a true hardened rally fan to get stuck into. I think we went to the other end of the spectrum with Dirt Rally, and I think one of the frustrations for me with Dirt Rally was that we weren't able to do enough to take players by the hand and lead them into the experience better. So we've addressed that with Dirt 4. If you enjoyed the simulation angle of Dirt Rally, then all of that stuff's still there. You just need to flick a few switches and you'll get the simulation handling. In fact, it's a significant improvement compared to what we had with Dirt Rally. We've had Petter Solberg and Chris Meek help us refine the feeling of the game, and they've been really useful with the insight that they've given us. And I think we're in a much better place for that type of experience. But we've also managed to layer in, a more gamer-focused handling model, which still uses the same simulation engine underneath, but it's how we kind of interpolate that to the controller that we've done big significant changes. So it's not Dirt 2, Dirt 3 handling, but it's much more in tune with that style of handling.
Now,
and it just means that it's much more inclusive.
I have to ask now, one thing force me to do, it sounds terrible, I didn't have a gun to my head, but one thing I did do with and I said it at the top, genuinely, I went out and invested in the really nice steering wheel, the proper thing, the proper seat and everything else, because I think it's fair to say trying to play Dirt on a controller was really not an option as such, especially on some of the more complicated stages. Have you been able to bring it back to the controller, or are we still really at that stage where it's got to be a steering wheel?
No, it's 100% playable on controller, especially in the gamer setting. Not wanting to boast, but I could play Dirt Rally on a controller fairly well. I could play it on a keyboard actually reasonably well.
That's just showing off now, Paul.
It is.
That's just showing
it is
off
a little bit. But no, I mean, look, this all comes down to the fact that I'm a huge rally fan. I know why the sport's amazing. I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast knows why the sport's amazing. But what I see my role now as doing is essentially getting more people interested in rallying, and there is no better way to do that than through a game. I think I'm hoping Red Bull Media does more with the WRC to try and encourage new fans into the sport. But ultimately, if you make a great game, and as we proved with the Colin McRae Rally Games, if you make a great game, people who aren't necessarily interested in rally as a sport will start to learn about rally and will get invested in the sport, and then will start to, you know, go out and spectate and hopefully feed into the sponsorship and the viewing figures. And that's what the sport needs to kick on. It's been through tough times, and you know, I want as many people as possible to play this game, not just from a businessman's point of view, but from a, you know, a lover of the sport's point of view. And the only way we can do that is by making it as accessible to as many people as possible. And that doesn't mean dumbing it down, it just means giving a much smoother difficulty curve into the experience. And again, that's something that, that your stage really gives us an opportunity to do, where before I had to choose 12 tracks that worked across an entire 100-hour experience for a player. Now I can choose from an infinite selection of tracks and make sure that at the beginning of your career, the tracks you're racing on are nice and gentle, haven't got big cliffs at the edge, you know, give you an opportunity to get to grips with the car while you're learning the game. And then we can throw the more challenging stuff at you later on when you're more ready for it.
Now, I think it's fair to say the online community was such a huge kind of push behind the original. Obviously, originally it came out on PC, and you know, we were banging on. We all wanted it on PS4 and things like that. Have you reached out again to the online community? Have they been doing bits and pieces for you, or are they a bit involved in this process as well?
So we've kind of reverted back to the way that we used to make games a little bit, in that we had a lot of feedback from Dirt Rally that we weren't able to incorporate into Rally because of limitations in the engine. So it's not like we just stopped listening and we've gone off and done our own thing. This is an accumulation of all of the learnings from Dirt Rally and all of the stuff that we couldn't do as part of Dirt Rally. So there's huge improvements across the board, and those guys, although they haven't been as proactively involved through an early access process like they were on Rally, they have been involved in, you know, essentially the decision making that has come through to where we are with Dirt 4. We have had some core community members, people like Luke Harvey, who I've co-driven for recently, come in and you know, sign NDAs, and they've worked with us to make sure that we're on track with what we're doing. And then obviously Chris Meek, Petter, and Petter's son Oliver came in and gave us a lot of feedback on the cross cart, which he drives out in Scandinavia. So, you know, we've had as much expert input as possible, as well as our fans who we can confide in to come in and make sure that we're not going off and doing something crazy. And I think the reaction to the announcement and the way that the press have received the news that we are making a more accessible version of Dirt without dumbing things down has been hugely positive, and we're very excited about the next few months of getting this game finished and out there.
Fantastic. You just mentioned the cross cart. If we can very quick, I'll be honest with you, Ryan, the car I use the most on Dirt is the Sayer F2 car. I just love driving that car, and I love the sound of it and everything else. So I think you and I spoke about this. That's my era, and I just love the F2 cars and everything else. Where are we at with kind of cars and equipment in the new game?
So we've kept the majority of cars that we had in Dirt Rally, but we've made improvements to the vehicle model. So now when you look back, when you're sat inside the cockpit, you'll see the back of the car now, all the spare wheel and cage and stuff behind you. So there's some nice improvements that we've made there. Obviously, everything has had a bit of a refresh from a simulation point of view, more accurate suspension geometry and engine mapping modeling, and the aerodynamics has had a huge rework as well. So all of that stuff's good. In terms of car list, I can't go into too many specifics because we're still in negotiation with the manufacturers, but the main fan favorites are still there. And then we've layered in new R5, R2, and R4 classes that basically are contemporary rally cars that you would go out and compete in if you were working your way through the rally ladder at the minute. And, you know, I think that was a bit that was missing from Dirt Rally a little bit. That sense of, okay, if I want to drive a front wheel drive car, I have to drive a Mini and then jump into an F2 kit car, which is like the top end front wheel drive car. Whereas now, you know, having an R2 car to jump into, we've got the Super 1600s in the Rallycross series as well. We've also got a normal Peugeot 205 GTI, which I think Ryan will be happy about. So it's just you know, we've just essentially filled up a few gaps here and there. In the list, and just kind of fleshed it out a bit. But yeah, everything's had a good old revamp, and you know, we're really happy with how it's shaping up. As a player, you get to have a much more kind of tangible career to work your way through. You start off as a hired driver, and then you can eventually earn enough to build your own team and hire PR agents and get your own sponsors and put your own livery on the car. So it's all just fleshed out across the board, and it just feels like a much bigger game than I think Rally ever did.
No, do you know what? I genuinely can't. I love that side of it as well, because there was a couple of other games back in the day where you could do that and kind of build a career and everything else. And though I'm genuinely really, really looking forward to. So kind of time scale wise, where are we at with it at the moment?
So I think we've just pushed really hard to get the announced demo together, which has given us a really good perspective on, you know, what we need to do to see this game fail and get it the quality where it needs to be. So the next few months we'll be polishing up all the other locations, cars, game modes, getting every bit of difficulty balancing sorted out, make sure the AI are driving competitively in all of our circuit based racing. So yeah, we're looking at early June for release. I think the dates have been pretty much locked in as being 6th to 9th, depending on where you are in the world, of June. So yeah, we've got a lot of work to do to get this across the line, because it is a big game. But you know, the positive reaction we've had in the last week has been hugely motivating, and we just need to press on now and get it done.
Fantastic. Listen, if there's anything we can do in our infinite wisdom in what we do, me, Ryan, Jack, whatever, please let us know, because we'd love to be involved. Whatever we can do to help you guys out would be great.
Well, look, if you guys are in the area, I know Ryan pops by to, I think, Daventry, because that's where his car was getting looked after. So if you're ever in the area and you want to pop in and say hi, you're always welcome.
Do you know what? We really, really should do that. We need to work before. We'll work towards June as well, especially when it's getting released. So we'll definitely have a chat with that. But listen, Paul, thank you so much. How can people get involved? How can people, obviously, the Twitter feeds and stuff we've put out there, is there websites and stuff people can go to and start looking and stuff?
Yeah, so the website is going to be dirt4game.com, but I think for now you'll just go to dirtgame.com as you used to do. Twitter is @dirtgame. We've got r/dirtgame for Reddit users as well, and then I think we're dirtgame on Facebook as well. So it's only the website that's got the four in it now.
Okay. Well, listen, folks, you know what to find. And obviously, if you want to follow Paul as well, not obviously, I mean, on Twitter as opposed to kind of on his way home. Paul is @kickup with an underscore in between the kick and the up. Is that right? Have I got that the right way around?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
There you go. So we'll retweak this stuff out anyway. But Paul, thank you so much for joining us in the final section of Absolute Rally. Really do appreciate it.
It's an absolute pleasure as always.
Thanks, folks. You know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/Absolute Rally. Really do appreciate the download. We'll be back same time, same place next week.